Well, good morning, Squire. Pud? Mr. Means, I'm sorry. I'm evidently intruding on a private matter. I'll leave.
I think you better stay, Mr. Hartsook, and hear what Squire Hawkins got to say. Well, go on, Squire. Tell him.
Remember those characters? Mr. Means, Bud, Squire Hawkins, and the teacher who was bullied, threatened, and almost tarred and feathered?
Sure, they're from the Hoosier Schoolmaster. Tell it again.
Tell it again. Transcribing the great stories we all know and love. Today, The Hoosier Schoolmaster by Edward Eggleston. And we tell it again. We've come to think of a schoolhouse as a pretty peaceful place. But 100 years ago, in a tiny rural village called Flat Creek, Indiana, the single house of learning which the boys and girls of the community were forced to attend was anything but peaceful. One cloudy day in early September, a young man made his way down the country road and up to the house of old Jack Means, one of Flat Creek's leading citizens. A vicious bulldog showed his displeasure at the intrusion, while old Jack Means himself sat in the front yard shaving shingles, surrounded by his brawny son, Bud. And both of them eyed the stranger with the same suspicion displayed by the bulldog.
Would you mind calling out the dog?
Why, for?
Well, so I can come up and talk to you.
What about?
Teaching in the school.
Huh? Get along, Bud. Get out. Bud, take care of that dog. All right, mister, you can come up now. So you want to be schoolmaster, do you?
Yes. My name's Hartsook. Ralph Hartsook. You're Jack Means, aren't you?
Yep, I'm Means. This here's my boy, Bud.
Well, hello there. I heard that you need a schoolmaster here, and that you're one of the trustees, so I've come to apply for the job.
What makes you think you're able to teach school in Flat Creek?
Well, I've had a good education myself. I'm trained to teach, and that's what I want to do.
Takes a heap sight more than that to learn these critters anything. Last two masters we had, the boys drive off a week apiece. Pitched them right out of the schoolhouse.
Oh?
We ain't soft sorts in these diggings. Schoolmaster in these parts got to be more than a teacher. He's the boss of the brats. And he got to be a right smart man in more ways than one.
I think I'm a right smart man. In a few ways.
Well, if you think you can trust your hide in Flat Creek Schoolhouse, I can't see no objections. But if you get licked, don't come running us. Flat Creek don't pay no insurance.
Then I can have the position?
Far as I'm concerned.
Well, are there any other trustees I have to consult?
Well, there's a couple. But I pay the most taxes, so they just let me run it. Now, there ain't been no other application, so you can begin right off, Monday. You can board and room with us. Bud!
Yeah, Paul?
Tell Hannah to tell old lady we got a new boarder. Learning and licking. Licking and learning. The two's got to go together. You learn them just as much as you lick them, and not a penny's worth more. And a pass of taters, Ma.
Huh. Like to see him try to lick me.
Hear that, Master? That's what I'm telling you. Of course, Bud here's just about the biggest critter in school, with a boy named Pete Jones running him a close second. You won't have too much trouble with the gals. But the boys need learning and licking.
How about it, Master? Think you can lick me?
Well, frankly, Bud, I don't intend to try.
Good thing. I thrashed the last master myself. Thrashed him right out of school.
You won't thrash me.
I won't, huh? Well, I could whoop you in an inch of your life with my left hand.
I know, but you won't.
I won't.
No.
Why?
Well, for one thing, because we're going to be good friends.
We are, huh?
Yeah. Being the largest boy in school, you'll help me keep the rest of them in line.
Well, huh? Why?
Because we're friends.
We are, huh? Why should I be friends with you?
Because you know I want to be friends with you. I didn't come here to fight. I came to teach. You want to learn. If you didn't want to learn, you wouldn't have a schoolmaster anywhere near Flat Creek. Oh, we'll make a deal. You do the fighting, and I'll do the teaching. How about it?
I don't know.
Looks like you might have made an ally, Master. You get Bud on your side, and you might hang on a while, a month or two, maybe. But don't forget what I'm telling you. Learn and lickin', that's the way. Anna, bring some more taters. Anna! Where in tarnation's that gal?
I'll get her, Paul.
Now, you sit still. Anna! Whatever you do, don't get a gal bound to you. It's more trouble than it's worth.
The schoolmaster was a little puzzled by Mr. Mean's last remark, but he soon found out who Hannah was and what was meant by having a gal bound to you. It seems that Hannah was an orphan, and in those days it was the custom that if a family took an orphan girl into their home, the girl agreed to be bound to the family until she was of age. Bound, meaning to serve in a menial capacity without pay and not leave or run away, the penalty for so doing being a jail sentence. The following day was Sunday, and after church service, the Means family returned home. And the schoolmaster decided that this might be a good time to try and win another member of the clan over to his side.
Miranda. Miranda, have you ever read the story of Sinbad the Sailor? Now, would you like me to tell it to you? Well, it goes something like this. In the days of the Caliph Harun al-Rashid, there lived in Baghdad a wealthy and fabulous man called Sinbad the Sailor. Sinbad returned to Baghdad wiser and richer. There was another man who had quite an adventure at sea. His name was Robinson Crusoe. He was shipwrecked and spent over 30 years alone on a deserted island, except for a parrot and a black man called Friday. There was Gulliver, lying on the beach, bound hand and foot by little people no bigger than his thumb.
The schoolmaster told all these stories and more. And after a while, he saw that Mr. and Mrs. Means had wandered into the room, and later Bud. Everyone except Hannah, the bound servant, listened to Ralph Hartsook as he spun the famous tales of mystery and adventure. And by the time night fell and bedtime was at hand, the young schoolmaster had truly made friends with Mirandy, Mr. Means, and most important, Bud. The following day, which was Monday, as the master approached the schoolhouse to take up his new duties...
Master, hold on a minute.
Well, good morning, Bud. Why, aren't you going the wrong direction? I thought the schoolhouse was over there.
Tis. I sneaked out and came around the back way through the orchard. If they ever learn I told you, I'll have to lick the whole kit and caboodle of them.
Well, what is it, Bud?
You're going to have trouble with Pete Jones and Hank Banda. They already got their first trick set, and if you fall for it, you won't have a chance with the critters.
What kind of a trick, Bud?
Well, there's a pond of water lays right under the school, almost right under your desk. Pete and Hank have loosed up a plank right under the blackboard, and the very minute you step up to it, you'll fall through into the pond.
I see. Well, thanks for telling me, Bud.
Don't let them see you noted, and whatever, don't let them know I told you.
I won't, Bud, I won't.
Ralph walked on to school, and by the time he arrived, he'd thought out a way to turn the trick to his own advantage. All day long, he carefully avoided stepping on the loose plank without making it seem obvious. First, the students held their breath every time he came close to the plank or appeared to be almost ready to step on it. But as the day wore on and the hot afternoon sun streamed in through the windows, they began to lose interest in the trick that had failed. And by the time school was over, they'd forgotten all about it. Then just as the bell rang...
Just a minute, please. Will someone please erase the blackboard? The Hank Banner.
Yeah?
Erase the board.
Hank went to the board in a hurry, anxious to be out of school and on his way home. He picked up a rag and stepped to the board, completely forgetting the loose plank. He stepped on it, and down he went. Into the water with a splash.
Help me! Help me!
Somebody
help me!
Help me! Oh, dear. Now, who could have been so careless as to put a loose plank under the blackboard?
story of the Hoosier Schoolmaster will continue in just a moment. You can't say it too often. The American way is teamwork, the greatest good for the most people. It's a philosophy that's made this nation great. The knowledge that if we all work together to produce more per man, per machine, per hour, we'll all gain. Our goal is to cooperate for better jobs and higher incomes, for more of the good things in life that are possible under the American economic system. For your free copy of the booklet, The Miracle of America, write Box 10, Times Square Station, New York City. And now, Tell It Again resumes the story of the Hoosier Schoolmaster by Edward Eggleston.
The loose plank trick that boomeranged on Henry Banta only served to make the school bully more determined than ever to get even with the schoolmaster. And both Banta and his crony Pete Jones swore revenge and vowed that they'd fix the master proper at the very next opportunity. A few weeks later, it appeared that their opportunity had come in the form of the spelling school. Again, it was Bud Means who told the schoolmaster what could be expected.
Don't know how you have spelling schools up where you hail from, Master, but down here in Flat Creek, it's kind of an important gathering.
Well, I've heard of spelling schools, Bud, but just what's so important about it?
Well, for one thing, it could put you in a mighty bad light to lose. Last three masters got spelled down by Pete Jones, and that was the end of them.
Pete Jones, huh? Oh, I'm surprised. He's such a good speller.
Pete's a champion in these here parts. He don't look it, but he's got a powerful heap of spelling in that thick head of his.
Well, Bud, I'll do my best. I'm supposed to be a pretty good speller, and I'll try not to disgrace myself or my friends.
Oh, I ain't worried too much about you beating Pete Jones.
No? Well, then what's troubling you?
Sure shooting. After you turn in the plank trick against Hank Banta, and if you should outspell Pete Jones, they'll do something to get even. And it won't be no kid's trick like the plank. Yep, Master, you're in a kind of tough spot. You gotta beat Pete Jones, but if you do, you'll have more trouble than ever with him.
Two nights later, the entire population of Flat Creek, Indiana, gathered in the schoolhouse for the spelling school session. Except for the babies and the two or three women left home to look out for them. Even Hannah, the girl bound to the Means family until she came of age, was allowed to attend. But of course, she wasn't expected to have to spell. The moderator was old Squire Hawkins, Flat Creek's leading citizen, who can best be described as a swallowtail coat, a pair of black gloves, a loose toupee, a glass eye that was always getting out of focus, and a set of badly fitted false teeth. He explained the peculiar rules requiring the master to spell against everyone else, and called the words alternately to Pete Jones and the schoolmaster, who deliberated seriously on each syllable before taking a chance at the spelling.
Ladies and gentlemen, young men and maidens, Mr. Hartsook, the master, having spelled down James Phillips and George Buchanan, will now meet up with Flat Creek's champion, young Pete Jones. First word to the master, misanthrope.
M-I-S, miss, A-M. And T-H-R-O-P-E. Throp. Misanthrope.
Correct. Next word to Pete Jones. Petrophyte.
P-E-T-P-R-O-P-H-Y-T-E. Petrophyte.
Correct. Carbopyridic.
C-A-R-C-A-R-B-O-B-O. P-O-I-R-I-D-I-C. Pyritic.
Wrong! Same word to Pete Jones. Carbopyritic.
C-A-R-C-A-R-B-O-B-O-P-I-R-Y-D-I-C. Pyritic.
Wrong! Both spells missing, they get another word. T-Rex spelling the carbopyritic. C-A-R-B-O-P-Y-R-I-D-I-C. Says it right here in the book. And next word to Pete Jones. He haven't missed last. Theodolite.
T-H-E-P-O-O-D-O-L-Y-T-E. Theodolite.
Wrong! Same word to the master.
T-H-E-O-D-O-L-I-T-E. Theodolite.
Correct! Pete Jones. feller again, the master.
From then on, it was easy spelling. The master spelled down the rest of the community as fast as anyone could say ABC. And finally, there was no one left. It appeared that Ralph Hartsook had conquered Flat Creek in the spelling school, and everyone prepared to leave. But it was the master himself who stopped them and called the squire's attention.
Squire Hawkins! Squire!
Yes?
There's still one more person who hasn't spelled.
Eh? Who's that?
Hannah. Hannah hasn't spelled against me.
Oh, Hannah's just a bound gal. She can't spell.
Nevertheless, she has a right to try. The rules say so, don't they, Squire?
Rule says everybody present's got a right to a chance to spell again your master.
All right, then. Proceed with the spelling school.
So Hannah went to the front of the room and surprised everyone by holding her own against the master for almost 30 minutes. It was when Hannah spelled Micrococcus that Ralph Hartsook knew he had met his match. And for the first time, he observed the means-bound servant girl closely. What he saw made his heart beat a little faster. And he wondered why he hadn't noticed before that Hannah was a very lovely young lady. Her face was fine and sensitive. Her long hair like silk. Her voice quiet and well-modulated. Where she had received her education or learned to spell was a mystery to the master. But spell she could. And when the squire said,
"Next word to the master, daguerreotype."
And the master spelled
D-A-U-D-A.
Wrong! Same word to Hannah.
D-A-G-U-E-R-R-E-O-T-Y-P-E.
Correct!
So Hannah spelled down the master, much to everyone's surprise. Hannah's success did not disgrace Ralph Hartsook, for the schoolmaster had defeated Pete Jones, the champion. And after all, Hannah was not a pupil in school. So everyone went home, and after a while, the spelling contest faded from memory. To everyone, that is, except Pete Jones. Following his defeat at Hannah's hands, Ralph Hartsook took greater notice of the girl. And as time went on, the schoolmaster had to admit to himself that he had fallen in love with her. One night several weeks later, the schoolmaster found himself approaching bedtime with insomnia, due, no doubt, to his thoughts of Hannah and his desire to tell her of his affection. Ralph knew only too well that not only would Mr. Means oppose his suit, but that if the old man learned of it, he would probably see to it that Flat Creek obtained a new schoolmaster. With these problems on his mind, Ralph Hartsook decided to take a walk in the orchard, and on reaching the place, found to his pleasure and surprise, none other than Hannah.
Hannah!
Mr. Hartsook. Oh, I hope you won't tell Mrs. Means. I couldn't sleep, so I went for a walk, but she'd be angry if she knew.
Oh, Hannah, my dear. I've been trying to arrange a meeting with you ever since the spelling contest. There's so much I want to tell you.
Mr. Hartsook, I...
Hannah, if this seems sudden or clumsy or takes you by surprise, don't judge or decide hastily. But I must speak to you while I have the opportunity. Hannah, I love you. I want you to be my wife.
Mr. Hartsook.
Do you feel any affection for me, Hannah? Do you think that you might... Do you think that you could... Oh, Hannah, I have no words when I need them most.
I'm deeply flattered that you care for me, Mr. Hartsook. I think you're a fine man. Just the kind of a man I've always hoped would... But I'm a servant, you know. I'm only 19 and I'm an orphan and I'm bound to the means until I'm of age. So it's not possible for me to think of marriage for at least 2 years.
Oh, Hannah, just to know that you like and admire me is enough for now. I'll wait 2 years. I'd wait 200 years if we could live that long. Oh, Hannah, my dear.
Ralph Hartsook and Hannah walked through the orchard and talked of many things. They made up for all lost time and told each other their thoughts and hopes, and in this way learned to know each other in a few hours. The following morning, however, brought a sudden and unexpected development, a development that plunged Ralph Hartsook into a new problem, a problem that could well cost him his very life.
Good morning, Squire. Bud, Mr. Means. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm evidently intruding on a private matter. I'll leave.
No, I think you'd better stay, Mr. Hartsook, and hear what Squire Hawkins got to say. Go on, Squire, tell him.
Well, I... Mr. Hartsook, is this here your watch?
Watch? Why, yes. Where'd you get it?
It was found last night at the scene of the robbery.
Robbery?
Old fellow lives in town called a Dutchman. He farms a little and trades. Just been into Clifty City, sold about $300 worth of grain. Somebody robbed his house last night, Mr. Hartsook. Took the money, left this watch by mistake.
Well, surely you don't think that I... Now, why would I rob the man?
That's what I've been telling the Squire Master. So all you've got to do is tell us where you were last night, and I'll put a stop to the whole thing.
Last night? Why, I was here, of course.
Bud went to your room long about 8. You wasn't there.
Well, I know, but I took a walk in the orchard.
Alone?
Well, I... Yes, I couldn't sleep, so I took a walk.
How for a long walk? Bud here says he heard you come in long about 11.
Yes, that was a long walk.
Well, now, Mr. Hartsook, appears to me you'll have to cook up a better story than that if you would expect us
I'm
to
not be... cooking up a story. I went for a walk, that's all. Well, you believe me, don't you, Bud?
Thing is, Mr. Hartsook, it ain't important whether Bud believes you or not. Or me or the Squire. What's important is that everybody believes you. Everybody in Flat Creek, that is.
You see, Mr. Hartsook, people around these parts don't like thieves. Ain't got much use for trials and judges and such. Had a man come to town long about 5 years ago. Somebody got robbed one night. The man got tarred and feathered. I'd be thinking about that walk you took last night. Might be better if you'd taken it with somebody. Somebody who'd be willing to say so.
Now the Hoosier schoolmaster was really in a spot. If he admitted that he was with Hannah, he well knew that the girl would be subject to punishment from Mr. and Mrs. Means, as well as the fact that if his romance with the girl were discovered, Mr. Means would see to it that he lost his job. But how to explain the presence of his watch at the scene of the robbery? He knew he had it in his pocket the morning before in school. And then suddenly he remembered. At the end of the day, when school was letting out, Hank Banta had stopped to ask him a question. And Pete Jones had started an argument with Hank. The boys began to fight, and Ralph had stepped in to stop it. That was when either Pete or Hank must have picked his pocket and taken his watch. Armed with his new piece of information, the schoolmaster went at once to Bud Means, the one person he felt was still on his side.
But you must believe me. Either Pete or Hank took my watch yesterday in school. Either Pete or Hank, or maybe both of them robbed the Dutchman. They're trying to place it on me. You said they'd get even with me, you remember?
If I was you, Master, I'd be getting my things together and preparing to light out from Flat Creek. I was in town today, and I heard things.
What things, Bud?
Things like some of the people getting a lot of chicken feathers together, cooking up some hot tar.
And you don't believe me. I'm sorry, Bud. I thought we were friends. I've tried to be friends with you.
Where was you? Where was you exactly, Master, last night?
I told you. I took a walk in the orchard.
I was in the orchard last night, Master. I didn't see you.
The quiet in the schoolroom that day was ominous with its silence and lack of the usual tricks and pranks the students were wont to play. But Ralph Hartsook stood his ground and refused to be intimidated or to leave. That night he went to his room and sat down to wait for whatever came. It wasn't long before he heard it, the low, angry murmurs of the irate citizens of Flat Creek. They came closer, their torches throwing a red glow in the night air. And Ralph saw through his window that they were armed with a barrel of tar and bags of feathers. Then, just as they burst into the house, he left his room and confronted them.
There he is, boys! That's going to see!
Get him before it runs!
I have no intention of running. Do what you feel is right. I tell you again that I did not commit that robbery.
Don't pay no attention to him!
He's guilty, all right!
Get the tar out, man! We'll earn him!
At that moment, Bud Means came into the room, dragging the much bruised and battered figures of Pete Jones and Hank Banta after it. He propped the two culprits up against the wall and ordered them to talk.
Don't, Bud.
Don't hit me again. We did it. Me and Hank. We robbed the old Dutchman to get even on the master.
So Bud saved Ralph Hartsook from the mob. But he was helpless to stop the ire of his mother and father against the master when they learned of his proposal to Hannah. It took Ralph himself to solve that one. And it was something that Hannah said that gave him the clue.
Mr. Means, I know this may come as a shock to you, but Hannah's free to do whatever she wishes. She's not bound to you and hasn't been for over a year.
What? What kind of fuddy-duddle talk is this? Hannah's bound to us till she's of age.
That's right. And she became of age, legally of age, for a woman in the state of Indiana when she reached 18. You're free, Hannah. No one can stop you from leaving. No one can stop you from marrying me. That is, if you want.
Mr. Hartsook, I'd be pleased to marry you, sir, if you think I'm worthy.
Ralph Hartsook left Flat Creek, and he and Hannah were married. But his influence on that little village remained for many a year. They still talk about the master who made friends with Bud Means and who beat Pete Jones in the spelling contest and who took the Means-bound girl away for his wife. On the other hand, the master still finds himself thinking about his experiences in Flat Creek and all he learned about being a teacher. As he sits at his desk behind a door that says, Dr. Ralph Hartsook, Ph.D., Professor of Social Economics, University of Indiana.
The story of the Hoosier Schoolmaster was brought to life on Tell It Again by Ben Wright as Ralph Hartsook. Others in the cast were Jeff Corey, Ken Harvey, Gene Young, Dick Petticini, Larry Dobkin, and Marvin Miller, who was the narrator and played the role of Squire Hawkins. Music was by Del Castillo. Ralph Rose wrote and produced the transcribed free adaptation and directed the players. And now here's Marvin Miller to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, Tell It Again will bring you one of the greatest adventure stories of all time. The story of a man who went around the world and another man who followed him. If you've ever made a bet that you could do something in a given length of time, you'll want to hear Around the World in 80 Days by Jules Verne. So join us next week, won't you? When we tell it again.
Memorial Day and its parades have gone for another year. But next Sunday night, one of the great parades of all time, the Hit Parade on Parade, comes marching to CBS to take over the Jack Benny spot for the summer. Be sure to hear the Hit Parade on Parade when it starts marching next Sunday night in the Jack Benny time on the same CBS network stations. This is John Jacobs speaking. Now stay tuned for 5 minutes of the latest news and the Let's Pretend program, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS network stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.